Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. At a time in their music career when many peers are paring back, singer-songwriter Chip Taylor is putting pedal to the metal. His just-released album, The Little Prayers Trilogy, is playing to great critical acclaim, and his touring schedule takes him to Delaware for a performance tonight. Chip, thanks for standing still long enough for this conversation.
Hey, Dave. Good to talk to you.
Now, Chip, let's start, at the beginning. And before the terms singer-songwriter, roots music, and Americana came into public vogue, you apparently dreamed of creating that kind of sound as a youngster growing up in Yonkers, New York.
Yeah, well, when I was growing up, Dave, there wasn't really any country music, but I tuned in late at night to the radio, and my mom and dad let me do that, and I heard Wheeling, West Virginia, and country music. It was a wonderful thing to be able to listen to that Motorola radio. So I heard that and some blues music I never would have heard.
And as you mentioned, your parents, let's note your father, Elmer, was a pro golfer.
Yeah, it was a poor kid off the fence of a golf course one time, and they gave him a couple of clubs, and he caddied and became really good and hurt his back and was resigned to be a teaching pro, but it was a good thing.
I hear tell he didn't do too bad a job instructing his son.
Yeah, well, actually, my brother Barry, the eldest one, he was on the mountains with Uncle George. But John and I, aside from doing, John interested in movies and me interested in music, we both played a lot of golf and were good junior players.
Now, you mentioned Barry, brother John. Why did they take on the stage name Voight?
Well, you know, the given name, obviously, is Voight. And when I was signed to King Records, they were telling me that I needed a name that was easier to pronounce, and so to be a rock and roll star, I changed my name.
Tell me about your first song, Faded Blue.
You were
what, some barely pubescent at the time?
Yeah, I guess I was 12 or something like that.
And the angst of this song about unrequited love is not puppy love. It sounds like you'd had many, many relationships that went south at that point.
that's what my granddaughter Kate said to me. She said, did you really have all those feelings back then? Yeah, that's a song my brother remembers kindly, you know, and every once in a while John gets on stage and sings that with me.
So in retrospect, do you think it was the Yonkers water or your parenting or some of each? Three esteemed brothers, you were the baby, Barry,
yeah.
John, and Chip.
Right, Barry's the guy that invented the formula that predicts when volcanoes will erupt, so he's done a lot of good, and he's got a wonderful sense of humor and a brilliant, wonderful, just a good guy. John is brilliant at what he does, and we're all close. And I think Mom and Dad just kind of let us find our way, and then they knew I loved music, and then encouraged. They said, what did you hear? You hear something you like? You know? And it was like that kind of thing.
I'm counting you have well more than a dozen releases, although you can break it up into specific periods. And after St. Sebastian in 1979, there is a gap in your resume to 1996. Can you explain?
Yeah, well, I was always interested in gambling, and even when I was writing my big hits, and the building I was writing out of was the same building as Jerry Goff and Carole King and Barry Mann, Cynthia Wild. It was 1650 Broadway. I had an office there. And at that same time, I was a very good card counter, but I was banned from all the casinos in Atlantic City at one point, so I turned my sights on horse race handicapping and studied from a master and got good at that, and so I was doing that.
Managed not to get banned from the ponies.
Your bookie can get banned from the ponies. Mine was Meyer Lansky at the time, and he was banned after a while. So I did that, and then I was balancing that with music, more music than gambling for a while, but then all of a sudden the gambling took over in 1981. I basically left music and just gambled for a long time until 1995.
And at this juncture, if listeners aren't yet familiar with you, I have a hunch they know some of your acclaimed songs. Of course, Wild Thing, Angel of the Morning. So were you using royalty proceeds for the gambling?
That's a good question. I made a profit every year gambling, and it wasn't a monster profit, but I had a profit every year. I loved that time, but once I came back to music in 1995, my mother got very ill, and I started to play music for her, and all of a sudden the spirit took me, and when it took me this time, I just totally stopped gambling because I wanted to.
You mentioned your mother. There's a song called Grandma's White LeBaron. Was that your mom?
That's mom. My kids called her grandma, you know, so that's what it's about.
I love the part of the song where she was hospitalized, but apparently it was Halloween, and they put lipstick on her, and she scared the heck out of the nurse.
Right. She had three mini heart attacks in a row, and then she was still ready to be grandma, be my mom. It was just wonderful and crazy and great.
Was she in part an inspiration for your most recent album, The Little Prayers Trilogy?
I think all of my family's been was part of that. And The Little Prayers Trilogy is just, you know, just as you get older, you take a look back and take a look forward and see what it all means.
You have a song way back in your, I believe, 1973 album, Last Chance, called 101 in Cashbox, poking gentle fun at the music business. What is the music business and yourself? What is the music business now? Nothing like Cashbox or Billboard, really.
There's not really a place to sell a lot of records, and my sales have dropped like everybody else's. But I like the business in a way because the internet can let you get your music heard by a lot of people where you couldn't have before. And actually, my new album is my biggest seller I've had in a while, but not in the United States, but in Europe.
Touch on that, if you will. What about Europe makes your work more receptive to that audience?
In the States, it seems like you almost have to play for a lot of audiences, particularly ones that don't know you, which is most of the ones I play for. You have to play something up-tempo here and there, you know, to keep them going. But in Europe, I could play five ballads in a row, and they would not care. And if it's stuff they like, they'd rather I do that.
Do the lyrics typically come first, and then you add the song, or vice versa, or some of each?
Once in a while, I'd just be walking down the street or something like that, and I'll start singing something. But usually, I'm playing the guitar and just getting a little groove or feeling something, and all of a sudden, some words with the melody will come out. And oftentimes, it makes no sense at all, or it's just something I have no idea what the sentence even means or what it is. But if what really moves the direction for me is a physical feeling. If I get a chill from whatever happened in that split second time, then that's what guides me, and that's why it's so rewarding to see what's coming next. And it's not so important to me that other people like it. I mean, I hope they do, but if I get some kind of feeling from it, it's rewarding for me, and then I continue it.
Well, then on behalf of those fans, here's wishing you a continuing case of the chills.
Yes, well said, Dave. Perfect.